We have an amazing relationship. We both have so much in common. We both love soup, and we love the outdoors. We love snow peas, and talking and not talking. We could not talk or talk forever and still find things to not talk about.
TBTL!
This thing turns out to be half as important as I figured it just might be. I'd say that you're all in line for some important promotions and personal citations when this thing's over with.
Let me take off my assistant skirt and put on my Barbra Streisand in The Prince of Tides ass-masking therapist pantsuit.
Do not put that on the imaginary radio show.
Hey, I've learned a lesson here, but I hope you all have too, about the vitality of shared experience. We will all remember this moment for the rest of our lives. It was dramatic, it was visual.
It was stupid.
It was stupid, but it was also theater.
Ooh, fancy.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Tuesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Good morning, today is a wonderful day.
My name is Luke Burbank, I am your host.
Brother, who are you? What are you doing?
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center. Perchtop, Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. It's episode 3045 in a collector series. We've got all kinds of things to discuss with you.
Let the fun begin.
Including a new Peloton ad that is getting a lot of heat.
Who are the ad wizards who came up with this one?
Yes, another day, another breakdown of a television commercial here on TBTL. You know, it's all about staying in your lane, and our lane is talking incessantly about TV commercials, so we'll do that again today. Oh, and speaking of TVs...
Television is no friend of mine.
The FBI says your smart TV could actually be watching you. In Soviet Russia, they do it really different than in America. Yeah, the FBI says that people can actually hack into your smart TV and watch you through the camera. There's another thing, though. Your TV is apparently reporting all kinds of info about you back to the TV maker, which I didn't realize. We'll talk about that, plus emails, V-mails. And, of course, it'll all happen with the able assistance of this guy, longest-running co-bro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's back at it again with the brown dress shoes, I think. To me, when he's speaking, he is an innocent champion of honesty. He is Andrew
Fireball
Walsh, and he is joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington, where it feels like I was mere hours ago. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. It was fun to see you last night. We got together at local Eagles Club, which you always tell me I shouldn't call it a club, but I don't know how to describe it. If I just say local Eagles, then people think that we're in a nest somewhere with eagles.
Yeah, I would say, I would just call it your local disc golf center. It's the way that I would describe if I was being accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, we have some boys there who are very into disc golf, and there's a big area that's often not used. It's like a big recreation area. You go in, and there's like a pub where everybody hangs out, and then there's a place with shuffleboard and a couple of dart boards, a pool table, and a big open dance floor area. And there's also got a big projector in there. And we had thought that we had sort of reserved that big room so that we could watch the Seahawks game on the projector yesterday. And then I was really worried, though, that we would show up and they'd be playing disc golf in there. You know, the preeminent indoor disc golf league at
right.
the local Eagles chapter.
Let me mention that this Eagles was once the leading quilting center in the Seattle area. It was a quilting store, so it has the most, you know, peace and love. And I love that Eagles, and I love everybody there. But it has the weirdest layout of any Eagles ever. And yeah, that big area, which I assume used to just contain all manner of fabric, is now, like you said, somewhere where you could watch the football game, But last night, there was something else going on.
Yeah, and it was a miscommunication because we had texted the folks there to make sure that we would have access to that room last night. And then I showed up and the disc golf guys were there. And we had to decide, are we going to stick around and watch it on the smaller TV in the pub? I apologize. I said to you before the show, before we started rolling here, I was so anxious about other people's experiences. Like, I didn't want you guys all coming to the Eagles because it was kind of our idea. It's kind of Genevieve's and I are... our idea to have you guys. You stuck around in Seattle for an extra day so we could all watch the game together. And so I just wanted it to be a good experience. And then when I realized that the, you know, we had to adjust at the last minute to something that was seemed less than ideal, I feel like I was very crabby about it, but I was crabby about it because I was trying to maintain other, or I was trying to manage other people's experiences. Like, I didn't want you and Durs to be disappointed with the setup. And so because of that, I was kind of cranky. And then I told you this morning, I'm waking up, I'm like, yeah, but when I'm cranky because I can't manage other people's experiences, I'm literally making their experiences worse. So my apologies for being cranky yesterday.
No, no, you didn't make anyone's experience worse. I could tell it was stressing you out because you ended up in the enviable position of saving seats.
Yeah.
Which I know you don't like. Let me just, if I could, I don't want to put anyone's business out there, but let me just read you.
Let me stop this music. Let's,
the text chain that unfolded yesterday, starting at 3:28 p.m. West Coast time. Camaro Kev, what time are you guys getting to the Eagles? I'll def be coming in hot.
Which means.
And then I respond,
late.
5 p.m. And you said, I'll be there at 5. And then Anita, not going to make it because she's not feeling well. And then at 4:47 from Andrew Walsh, bad news. Mike forgot about Frisbee night at the Eagles. Camaro Kev, snap, where to now? Andrew Walsh, he saved a bunch of seats for us by the TV in the pub area, but wondering if we should go somewhere else. Luke Burbank, Frisbee night? Question mark. Kevin, up to you guys. Andrew, yes, it's specifically why we checked with him about this yesterday. I thought. Luke Burbank, Frisbee night? Question mark. Camaro Kev, we've had this issue before. We'll fucking explain later. Unreal. I'm good with whatever. Luke Burbank, Frisbee night? Question mark. And then Kevin Dodrell, I'm using swears here because this is real. Fuck Frisbee. And then Genevieve with some kind of gif of a frustrated Robert Downey Jr. saying, ugh, I specifically asked about Frisbee. Anita, oh no, Frisbee night ruins things once again. Seriously, MNF should take priority. Andrew Walsh, Bitmoji, it be like that sometimes. End of communication.
Over and out. Roger that.
Yep.
Boy, yep. I didn't even realize that that's how you mic drop on a text conversation. Just throw in the Bitmoji and...
Yep. You know, you really...
That'll end it. That's the Bitmoji bomb.
You brought it to... Yeah. No, it was really... It ended up being super fun. And we'll, you know, we'll do a no-point conversion coming up later. And peace and love to our Minnesota fans who are... that is to say, fans of the Minnesota Vikings who are listeners. Some of our favorite blogger emerituses, in fact... would fit that exact definition. I know we have a lot of listeners in Minnesota, and I know it was a bummer game for them, and so I don't want to, you know, revel too much in what worked out for us because I would be real bummed if the shoe were on the other foot. But we will talk about the sports side of it in the No Point Conversion, which will be coming down the pike here in a couple of hours. It was a really fun time, though, being there, and, you know, yeah, despite the – and you know what? Let me say this about the disc golf situation. People were loving it.
Yeah, like, no, they're really into it. You got to give them
credit. And there was a bunch of people there. And there was actually kids kind of hanging out. Like,
oh, I didn't
you
see
know,
that.
You had some dads doing it, and then their kids were there with the mom and everybody. It was like not being underutilized. I kind of thought someone's going to set up those, you know, disc golf. It's like those, I guess a hole in disc golf is sort of a metal basket with chains hanging down, which – sort of absorb the energy of the disc of the Frisbee as it's being thrown at the thing. They had set a bunch of them up, and I was just like, no one's going to do this. And it was packed, and everybody was loving it. So I was good with that. I was glad people were having a fun time in both elements or both areas of this former quilting location.
Yeah, and I also, not to get too much in the Eagles business, but I mean, that's a regular thing that those guys rent out. And I'm pretty sure that that's, you know, the Eagles doesn't have a lot of ways to bring in money to pay the rent, right? So I don't want to, like, so these guys are doing a regular league. It's on the schedule. Yeah. They're paying for it. They're using it. It's good for them to, you know, like you said, it seems popular. So, Yeah. They're not doing anything wrong. You know, I was just frustrated because we had thought we had checked specifically for that thing. But the person we checked with is a busy guy who's like a really, really sweet guy. The moment I walked in, he realized it and he said, I'm sorry, I forgot about disc. I set up all these tables in front of you. And I know it was one of the, this is Mike the bartender, a man who I truly love and adore and is so good to us.
Such a sweetheart.
And I felt so bad because I think that when I came in, my face, you know, I've talked about this before, I'm not good at managing my face. I'm not good at managing other people's experiences, and I'm not good at managing my face. So I think I know that time is of the essence. Like, I'm not.
It was actually funny because, in here, but there was like, there was a moment of, I don't even want to say brusqueness because I don't want everything. It was so fun, and you weren't being a grump, but there was a moment of directness from you that I rarely experience, which I think spoke to how nervous or sort of the stress you were feeling when you realized that there was, in fact, disc golf going on instead of what our plan had been. Because you called me.
Oh,
I had gone on a walk around Green Lake, and you called me. And I was still really leaning into my Frisbee ? So you were like, yeah, they're doing a thing. And I was like, I literally answered the phone, Frisbee. And you were talking, and you go, we're running out of time here. I was like, well, okay. I was like, let's just do it there. But it was like, I could just tell that you were really, really trying to make sure that everything, you know, we salvaged as much sort of fun and as optimal an environment as possible for watching the game.
Yeah, and we didn't miss anything, but I am one of those people where I don't want to be dinking around like, oh, well, we're going to try to switch bars and it's kickoff time and we're going to end up missing the first half of the first quarter, which I guess you'd say the first eighth of the game, although I don't think like the first, 14/16 of the game. Oh, wait, no, that would be.
Yeah, that's traditionally how it's described.
Anyway, I know that I walked in there and Mike saw the disappointment on my face, and I hope he didn't. I hope he didn't take it as me being mad at him, because I wasn't mad at him. I was just kind of like frustrated with the situation, but I just sort of felt like the rest of the night I was trying to convey in every way possible that I still, you know, that I was not upset with Mike or generally speaking, but I just don't know that I was able to get that across. So I just left a $400 tip. That's not true.
Oh, good.
I don't have $400. I left like
to thank the donors of the day.
$15.
Hey, actually, you know what?
Want to do it?
Yeah, why not? Let's do. Let's get crazy.
Ooh,
you know,
like
the thing is,
crazy.
Not unlike Pete Carroll and that fake punt, people think that we won't thank the donors of the day before we go to the break, right? And that's considered the sort of TBTL pattern, but it's important that we break out of those patterns.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing right now the defense is in an alignment that we've been waiting for all season, and we're going to use this opportunity to thank Philip Brock of Chesterfield, Virginia, for donating to the show. Also, Elizabeth Jacobson of Tacoma, Washington. How about Ann Richardson of Edmond, Oklahoma? I feel like I've been to Edmond, Oklahoma long ago. I can't remember why. I bet it was great. Thank you, Anne, for the donation. Anthony Crunk of Newark, Delaware. That's what DE is, right?
That is what DE is, yeah. Can I?
I have an extremely limited interaction with the state of Delaware, other than all of my financial, my entire financial life passes through the state of Delaware.
Of course.
As far as IRL, I have not been to Delaware a ton. I've heard it's lovely. I've driven under Delaware once. There's like I feel like there's a huge tunnel that goes under a good part of Delaware.
Really?
I could be confused.
That sounds futuristic.
In this brochure, it says this tour is crunk. What does that mean?
Last year we noted Anthony's last name, and I was. I guess it didn't bother him because he donated again. So thank you, Anthony. But.
Or
also apologies.
He forgot to cancel his yearly donation.
You know what? In the words of both Adelaide's volleyball team fandom and the Seahawks last night, we'll take it.
Yeah.
We will take it. Jules Foster of Eugene, Oregon, and then Amanda Spear of beautiful Buffalo, New York, where famously, at least in my mind, I went to where Buffalo like buffalo style wings were invented. I believe it's called the Anchor Bar. Asked them if they had the Mariners game on, and they recommended I go to Buffalo Wild Wings. Never. It just was amazing to me. I went to the home of the Buffalo Wing, and they told me, yeah, just the B-dubs down at the mall will probably have the game on.
Man, that's whack.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
yes,
right?
It is. Oh, man, beef on whack. When's the impossible yeah. beef on whack coming out?
Impossible beef on whack.
I can just absolutely bore the listeners back to death with that journey for me. Philip, Elizabeth, Anne, Anthony, Jules, and Amanda. Thank you, babies, for making this show possible.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
I took note of this Peloton ad when it came out just because, as we've been establishing lately, I don't know, commercials just loom so large in my mind. And it's weird because we live in an era where one can kind of avoid most commercials. In fact, at Thanksgiving, Addie was kind of – she was marveling at the commercials that were happening during the Macy's parade because she is so – she is so cut the cord from conventional television watching. I mean, she's a I think she's a millennial. She's 25 going on 26, make you a millennial. She's of the generation where she's mostly watching things on her phone or on her laptop. She's just not part of the TV commercial economy. And yet, here I am, okay, boomer. Just, I see a lot of commercials and I have a lot of thoughts about them. And so this Peloton ad came out. And I guess part of it for me is that I am completely, the Peloton ads work on me because the bike is always in a beautiful home. And that, for some reason, I mean, I'm very fortunate to live in a beautiful home. So I don't know what I'm aspiring to. But there is something about this Peloton bike being in some beautiful, large mid-century home in Topanga, California, surrounded by trees, where a very conventionally attractive person is riding the bike at 5 in the morning before they have a productive day. There's something very aspirational about that whole thing for me.
Can I tell you why my brain is blown right now? Because I just clicked on this link. You sent me the show sheet right before we dialed up, so I didn't even really know what we were talking about. I'm clicking on this link here. This commercial inspired last week's After These Messages. We did a whole show on exercise equipment commercials. Specifically, Luke, I said to Genevieve, well, one angle we can take on this, too, is to always look at where these pieces of exercise equipment are set up in a home and what the background and what the home says. Because some I won't go through the whole show, but there were some commercials where specifically
– I would love to take the next 40 minutes off. So can we just insert – after these messages here?
Yeah, it would save us all a lot of time. And I could use the downloads. But there are some that show like I'm trying to think what the – there's a different bike or something. Oh, I think it's the new version of Bowflex, whatever that is, which is more like a elliptical thing. But they did a good job of showing that in smaller apartments. It was like a montage of things, and Vives and I were kind of pausing it and really looking at like what they're saying. It seemed like people of more modest means and people who are maybe younger in their first apartment, because you could see literally their bike is parked in the back of their living room. And then you have these other commercials, like this one you're going to talk about now, and one that's running now for an exercise mirror, which is just like an electronic mirror. And the woman who is in that commercial is she's doing this exercise mirror thing in a room that is exactly like the room that the rich dude parked his car in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's like an all-glass room up on a bluff somewhere overlooking all these trees. I'm like, if this woman can afford a house with this room in it, she got a personal trainer. She's not she's not exercising in front of a mirror with programs plugged into it or live classes or whatever they do.
Yeah, very good point.
Sorry, can't believe that this is exactly where we're going on today's show.
No, this is great. I'm so excited that, you know, Andrew, take the wheel. I'm excited that you've got a lot of thoughts on this.
Let me
play a little bit of this commercial. By the way, the headline from CNN, Scotty Andrew writing, Peloton's perplexing new holiday ad has incensed the internet. I noticed that this was kind of getting memed up on Twitter. Everybody was kind of taking shots at it, and I didn't get the whole backstory. I just noted the commercial because, again, I know that inevitably I am going to buy a Peloton and never ride it. Like, I just, it's a slow speed crash between me and the acquisition of a Peloton. And it's just a matter of how long I hold off. And the thing is, I don't even like riding bikes. Like, and I'm never home. So it is, even by my standards, a ridiculously bad idea. But the commercials, maybe not this one, but generally speaking, the commercials do kind of work on me. Okay, so for those people who haven't seen it, it's a woman who comes downstairs on Christmas morning and finds that she's gotten a Peloton bike. Her husband has given it to her. I intentionally did not use the term gifted. I don't like that for some reason. And then the commercial is sort of a video diary of her year riding this bike. Take a look.
Now,
a Peloton? Give it up for our first time riding.
All right, first ride. I'm a little nervous.
Oh, you know what?
5 days in a row. You surprised?
I am.
You know what this is?
Oh.
I'm so mad at CNN. This is one of those things where, like, you think you're going to see the commercial, but then they've taken the commercial and then they've put their own weird music under it.
Right. Here, I have last week's show sheet here, so I can just play it
from
this.
Thank you. Could you just...
Yeah. So this woman is like, so clearly you just heard in that ad, she comes down on Christmas morning, she has a Peloton, she's excited. And then things really get started when you realize that the rest of the commercial is going to be her kind of talking into her phone throughout the year, like kind of, as you said, recording this video diary. And the thing that really catches my eye at the beginning of this is that she's nervous. It's her first day of working out in her own home, and she's looking into the camera all, like, worried with her brow all furrowed, and she's nervous about her first inline. No, that's me. Her first
biking
class.
Yeah, that's your life, bro.
Yeah, exactly. So here we go. You're not going to fall off of this thing.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Now.
A Peloton? Give it up for our first time riding.
All right, first ride. I'm a little nervous, but excited. Let's do this. 5 days in a row. You surprised?
I am.
6 a.m. Yay.
Rising with the sun.
That was totally worth it.
Let's go, Grace and Boston. 50 rides.
She just said my name. A year ago, I didn't realize how much this would change me. Thank you.
This holiday, give the gift.
At the very end, she is sitting on the couch in her beautiful home next to her beautiful husband. They're watching her montage. I have no idea how long this movie she made was, but they're watching her video diary of exercising on a what do you call it? A motionless bicycle? Why can't I think of the name of the bike?
A
stationary bike on this giant, beautiful screen, and that's her gift to him a year later, her video diary.
I think the big takeaway from this ad is this has been a good Christmas for Tal Bachman, the guy who did that song, She's So High,
is that who that is?
High Above Me. It's like a 20-year-old song. Like, our friend Andy Haynes has this great bit about cauliflower. In fact, did we use that?
Yeah, we have.
We used that as intro tape, right?
Yep.
Like, cauliflower getting the call from its agent saying, you know, you booked pizza. And I forget what the other one is, but like lasagna is heavily interested or whatever. Or no, rice is heavily interested. Tal Bachman got a call. Guess what, bro? You can take a month off. I mean, no, I don't need to take shots at Tal Bachman. I'm sure he's a lovely person and he has, a great career. I don't want to besmirch that. But let's just say it was probably awesome news for him that they're going to use his song in this commercial.
It's
funny. Kind of out of the blue.
That's one of those songs where I just assumed had always existed and it was by nobody. It was just by the universe. It never even occurred to me that somebody did that song.
A Bachman has no name.
Exactly right. How can you own a Bachman?
Yes. So that song's going on, which is, again, kind of an interesting choice. But yeah, the reason the internet seems frustrated at this commercial for a couple reasons. One, the idea that the husband – I don't know if you guys got into this on ATM, but the idea that for anybody to give their partner a piece of exercise equipment is a pretty loaded thing in and of itself. So people are kind of – people are a little put off by that. They're a little put off by – well, I guess this idea of like – I mean it's very fraught. Just anything having to do with exercise and the kind of person who's doing the exercising in the commercial, because of the way that – and I think this is good. We think about body image, I think, a lot differently, or at least we should be. And so it's like some people are like, she's not even a person who would need this bike, and other people are like, it's an unrealistic, you know, portrayal of just kind of the normal person. There's also the fact that she doesn't appear to like – her body doesn't change over the course of this year, which I would assume is a very intentional decision by Peloton, because they probably – I mean, it's not supposed to be a before and after. Like, I'm sure they, mm-hmm. they, you know what I mean? Like, I think it couldn't have been accidental that this woman looks kind of exactly the same at the beginning and at the end of this, because they would have probably thought they were going to get a lot of blowback if she was, you know, larger and then not as large.
Yeah,
you know?
She's a very slender, very conventionally beautiful woman, I would say. Yeah, and her husband
now, the other question,
is a very handsome man. If I can just like weigh in on that for one.
And controlling.
And controlling,
he's
yeah.
as handsome as he is controlling.
For some reason, the very idea of getting somebody an exercise, a piece of exercise equipment for Christmas does not bother me. Again, like,
yeah.
you know, I got rollerblades for my birthday, something that I'd been – it's occurred to me the more I talk about the rollerblades on the show, I wonder if listeners are kind of like, dude, you're an adult. Why don't you just buy your own rollerblades? But it just sort of became a thing between Genevieve and me, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, part of that is I want more exercise, and so you know there's a whole conversation going on between us about these rollerblades, so it's not like an insult that Genevieve got me something that is exercise related. So I you know, I'm willing to give any of these Christmas exercise commercials the benefit of the doubt as far as, you know, the backstory, and you know, maybe she had been yeah. talking about wanting a Peloton. There is something weird, and obviously they're not going for this, there's something at the end, about the end of the commercial, sitting on the couch with him sort of like, and again, I know the idea is that she sat him down as a way of showing her appreciation, but that is the part that seems controlling and very off-putting to me. Like, he's now sitting there watching his beautiful wife's diary of working out. That seems odd.
Yeah, I mean, I think the underlying thing that makes a lot of people annoyed with the ad is that you just don't buy it. And, you know, people who are conventionally attractive can also have hard lives. It doesn't mean that, like, everything's always great. But, like, you kind of sort of indicated, this idea that she's really nervous about getting on the stationary bike, or as you call it, a motionless bike.
I believe I also said an inline bike. So I think they're interchangeable.
They are. Those are all, you know, the fit people have over 100 words for Peloton. But, like, the it's just like, you just don't buy that this woman, first of all, you assume she was already working out like a maniac to look the way she looks. And you don't think she was really scared about, like, oh my gosh, what's it going to be like when I'm on this stationary bike? And also, it's sort of like, it just feels like a person who's kind of born on third and thought they hit a triple. Like, she just seems like she has kind of every advantage going in life. And so it doesn't seem like you're not inclined to root for her in this journey, because she's, like you said, got a beautiful husband, a beautiful family, a beautiful home, a beautiful Peloton bike. She's just not a relatable character for, like, most of the rest of us, I think, which is not the actor's fault. You know, I'm sure, again, she's probably a very nice person, but it's just like, it's hard to root for someone. It's sort of like when a person who's very conventionally attractive is like, I'm just a total nerd. You're like, yeah, you may have cosplayed at a Comic-Con, but, like, it's somehow, like, again, a very conventionally attractive person being like, but I'm just such a klutz, I'm just such a nerd or whatever. It's like, it just doesn't quite work as well based on what you perceive their life experience to be.
Do you get Tom Brady vibes off of this whole thing? Is that,
yes.
Is this what you think? It's like, is this,
man,
triggering your, like, inside the Brady
yes.
household?
Well, there's a MAGA hat in the background of this shit too, which I think is cut. Honestly, that's a bold choice. No, you've exactly pinpointed it, my friend, which is there's a kind of just – yeah, there's a sort of a Tom Brady-ness to this whole thing that is, for me, a little – I wasn't annoyed enough to, like, go online and drag the commercial, but I understand why people are a little put off by it. The other question, though, is – is Peloton, you know, stupid like a fox on this? Their stock went up 5% on Monday, basically on the heels of all of this attention to the ad. We just played part of the ad, I guess probably the entirety of the ad. You guys played it on ATM. CNN's got it up. It's bouncing around the internet. I mean, I think this is kind of a win for Peloton, right?
Yeah, and I don't think stupid like a fox in this case. I don't think they made this because they thought that it was going to blow up the internet. In fact, I didn't even know it blew up the internet. It just kind of caught our attention. One thing that I will say in defense of this ad, actually a couple of things. Number one, in case people don't know, or in case people don't know that I know, you could make the argument that she's nervous because – this isn't just a stationary bike. This is – they have, like, live classes, right? Like, when I first saw these commercials, I thought that it was some sort of AI thing that you could program your name into it, but essentially you're working at these offline classes, you know, that might update mm-hmm. from time to time. I didn't realize that you actually are virtually in a room with other people yeah. and a live, you know, trainer somewhere, supposedly. So, I'll be honest with you, the first time I played a video game that I knew other real people were playing online, yeah, it was Mario Kart. I got nervous. Like, it was this idea, this was years ago, but it was like this idea of like, whoa, I'm in this virtual space with other people. Like, maybe you can make an argument there, and maybe that's what they're trying to get across. And the other thing I will say is Peloton does have a tradition now, at least a 2-year tradition, of having a holiday commercial that has a very specific narrative that they just kind of really flood the market on. Last year's commercial was kind of sweet. It was much better than this, but it was about a guy who I believe got a Peloton for his wife, but he's keeping it secretly in like some little shed outbuilding, little workhouse that he...
Oh, and she's been riding it secretly too?
Yes, I think there's two of them. One of them, he's been secretly riding the gift that he's going to give her on Christmas, and so he's out there exercising, and then on Christmas Day, he puts the tag back on it and presents it to her as if it's new. And then I believe there's another version of that same ad where she discovers it, maybe, and she's been using it before Christmas Day and then has to act surprised. Those are, you know, kind of along the same lines as this. Like, it's a story about a couple and their obsession with this cool thing. And so I don't think that Peloton was trying to troll people. I think this time they just kind of didn't realize from a class perspective this just seemed a little tone deaf.
Yeah, somebody wrote on Twitter that the only way to enjoy this Peloton ad is to think of it as the first minute of an episode of Black Mirror.
Right. Or watch that movie where there's one day a year where people can kill people.
The Purge. I always want to call it – yeah, The Purge. There you go. Let's see. There was one other thing I want to say before we moved on from this.
I filibustered.
No, that's okay. Oh, no. Two things about Peloton. One – The part of this ad that doesn't really ring true either is that she's getting a shout out, Grace in Boston. And the only reason I know that doesn't ring true is because when I was doing that TV story and I was talking to Brooke Morrow, a.k.a. Diablo Cody, in her garage where she wrote this musical that I did the story about is a Peloton bike. And she swears by it. But she was like, oh, yeah, I used to get a shout out sometimes. I mean, she's not on there as like Diablo Cody, but mm-hmm. she's like, now there's 8,000 people in every class. She's like, no one can ever get a shout out anymore.
Oh,
it's
really?
So popular that like no, like it's just very rare that anyone would actually get a shout out. So that's like the idea that she would, that Grace in Boston would get a shout out is sort of unrealistic. The other thing is I can't find the article this very moment, but the New York Times had an interesting piece like a month or two ago about how these Peloton communities are really it's sort of a place where people are finding like-minded individuals. It's like people who listen to the Howard Stern show have Peloton groups. People who – you name it. People, it's like the tens in a way. And in fact, I'm sure we have a number of tens who are Peloton users. It's this – it's become this weird sort of social thing as well, where people who have interests outside of Peloton gather around their love of this bike. And by the way, Diablo Cody – was swearing by it. That's another thing. Everyone I know who has this thing swears by it. So there's got to be something to it. But yeah, it's also become this way that people are meeting other people who have similar interests, and then they're creating these whole side groups, which is kind of a cool and I would imagine unexpected thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's not – the more – I didn't realize watching these commercials, kind of not paying tons of attention to them, just knowing that this one kind of irked me a little bit and that woman – using the mirror in her beautiful home kind of irked me a bit from like a class and probably jealousy standpoint. But I got to say, it wasn't until I explored more that I came to fully understand the online community nature of these things. And it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You got to give it to them. Hey, speaking of televisions, I don't think we were speaking of television, but I'm just going to try to force that transition. The article in the Washington Post today, let's see who wrote this. This would be Taylor Telford. A friendly reminder from the FBI, your smart TV could give hackers a way in. A bad cyber actor could change channels, mess with the volume, or even watch you, the FBI is warning. Can you imagine hacking into someone's TV just to change the channel or just to turn the volume up or down?
Kind of. This is like, I mean, actually the first time I've attempted to hack, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like if you had the wherewithal to get in someone's TV, then you just turn the volume up like one click,
just
a little bit too loud, and they just be like, God, I just got it just right. What is going on with this? That would be kind of a sort of delicious piece of trolling, as long as you weren't like using the camera to look at them or whatever.
Right.
Just tiny. You just keep deleting the most recent episode of Jeopardy. Like, what the hell?
I know. This thing's busted. Get a new box. It's still not working.
You just keep just subtly messing with their TV life. This article, it's actually the FBI's Portland, Oregon field office put out a warning. A bad cyber actor may not be able to access your locked down computer directly, but it is possible that your unsecured TV can give him or her an easy way into the back door through your router. Hackers can take control of your unsecured TV. As this article says, the low end of the risk spectrum would be changing channels, messing with the volumes, showing your kids inappropriate videos. Okay, now we're turning the water up a little bit. Now it's going from just subtle trolling to I don't want to do an impression of a kid asking their parents about something because then the thing I have to say to make it funny will be too graphic.
Yes.
But again, I'm imagining a mostly just a prankster, really, who's just putting inappropriate television on for your children. smart TVs are equipped with cameras and microphones, which allow users to control them. But that also allows the TV makers – this was the part of this story that I did not realize – to track what you're up to and relay it to advertising partners.
Ooh.
Automatic content recognition, in which the TV monitors itself – and broadcast it back to the TV maker as often as once a second, is now an industry standard. This is why the cost of TVs has gone down, Andrew, this article says.
Oh,
because the TV is just a big flipping research project on us. So they can sell you the TV for no money because they're making a bunch of money from advertisers by tracking what we're watching.
Oh, I did not know that. I thought they were cheaper because they were just literally built cheaper now.
I mean, that's probably part of it, but this is very sinister that they're just – I mean, you want to talk about the first minute of an episode of Black Mirror. They're just getting the TVs into your house so they can study you and target the ads better at you.
Wow. No, I had no idea. I wonder – I should look up and see if my TV is doing that. I don't know – I guess I don't know how much I care for me personally. I know these things are a little bit more fraught for other people as far as, you know – us kind of having a history of tracking the wrong people in this country from a law enforcement standpoint and bias slipping into that. I don't know, man. So much of my online information is out there. I guess I'm fine with the TV. I mean, a lot of the TV I'm watching is on a computer anyway. So I don't know. It doesn't shock me that much.
I'm often on this show talking about how I just don't really care. I'm more about convenience than anything. So it's like if they can anticipate that I'm going to, you know, need to order that Peloton and it just shows up as an ad somewhere or somehow it streamlines the process, I sort of generally don't care. But there is something about this that – like the idea that they're sending info back to the TV maker once per second.
Yeah, that's a lot of
I don't know. It just seems very – and again, I've got all these various, smart speakers and listening devices throughout the house. I mean, I'm bugging my own house voluntarily. So I don't know why the TV aspect of it kind of freaks me out. I'm very afraid of somebody hacking into the camera on my laptop or on the TV. Not enough that I want to put a cover over the camera, which is what I should probably do. It's just because I feel like it'd be so unflattering. Like if you were just looking at me, looking at the computer when I had no idea I was being observed, it would just be, I would just look like such a slack-jawed yokel as I'm just like scrolling, looking at TikTok, whatever it is I'm doing. Just like, it's just embarrassing to think of somebody observing me in that state. But that is a thing also that they think you can possibly do, hackers could do. There is a, there's U.S. law that actually protects watching TV is protected as a private activity under U.S. law.
Wow. I wonder when they created that. Because it seems
must
like,
have been recently because, you know, like I just feel like I feel like that this is a fairly new problem. But at some point there was a law that was passed that It is a private activity to watch your television. The Federal Trade Commission fined Vizio $2.2 million in 2017 for not being upfront with consumers about tracking software, and then ordered the rest of the industry to make it so that customers have the option to opt into tracking. But a lot of these agreements are in the fine print. So in this article, it actually says what you can do to sort of like have protect a little bit more of your privacy related to your television. To start, the FBI says, do a basic search on your TV model and its features. I think they mean like Google it, using words like microphone, camera, and privacy. They also urged users not to depend on default security settings and read privacy policies carefully. You know, honestly, that's not a very great piece of advice from the FBI.
To not read it?
Google. Just to Google. Like, the FBI's – here's how you can work – here's how you can make sure that your TV is more private. Google your TV's name.
Yeah.
And just, like, read about it. Thanks, guys. The thought had occurred.
Just Google, does Vizio know I've been watching Silk Stockings?
Silk Stockings is your Cheryl Teagues.
Is my what?
Cheryl Teagues, which is my like, it's my go-to like supermodel reference, which is horribly outdated. Silk Stockings is your Skinamax late-night risque television go-to, right?
Except, well, it wasn't. It was on like USA or something, so it wasn't like super dirty. It was like one of those things, and I do. I think it gets funnier with every passing year as history just leaves it further and further in the dust. But yeah, there was some like USA show before USA Up All Night. They would have some sort of a like kind of sexy noir-y show called Silk Stockings, and you would a young man would watch it in hopes of titillation.
It was no Red Shoe Diaries, which my Uncle Johnny, sorry, Uncle John, I don't mean to blow up your spot, but I remember being a teenager and staying at my cousin's house in Philly, and there was just like a bunch of random VHS tapes, and there was like one VHS tape of the Red Shoe Diaries, and I was like,
Uncle Mike,
nobody in this house is that artsy. Like,
is that the
Red
one,
Shoe Diaries?
Is that the one that had Mulder in it from the X-Files?
Yes,
David Duchovny?
Yeah. I believe so. And I think it was, Red Shoe Diaries is an American erotic drama series that aired on Showtime cable networks from 1992 to 1997 and was distributed by Playboy Entertainment overseas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it did have Duchovny in it. But I mean, it's amazing as I don't want to get too graphic or whatever. I'll leave it to the television hackers to let kids know about inappropriate sexual content. But boy, as a kid, and this is, before the internet was really existed, the way that money behaves in a certain way, if a dollar bill is on the ground or blowing down the street, it just almost physically behaves in a way that's really sort of unique to money. Does that make any sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, there could be a bunch of paper kind of and trash and litter floating around. But it's like if I see a dollar bill that's like in like the by the curb, my eye just goes to it.
Mm-hmm.
I was that way with anything that might have boobs.
Yeah, right.
As like a 9 to 17 year old male,
right,
which is sad because I at some point had a kid and I was still that way.
Yeah,
it was
right.
Like I had been to the mountaintop, but it was just like I'm looking
in the mountain.
And that was
baby.
I think that was what Dr. King was talking about. All those years ago, mm-hmm. I just like there's like 70 random VHS videos, most of which are just Philadelphia Eagles games that have been taped, and then or Flyers games, and there's like Red Shoe Diaries. Yes, I will be watching that after everyone goes to sleep.
What up, Uncle Mike? Is that his name, Uncle Mike?
No, this was Uncle Johnny. Uncle Mike is a very very Christian man.
Okay,
Uncle Johnny's a very Catholic man, which means watch the Red Shoe Diaries on Saturday and then go to confession on Sunday and then probably watch it again on Monday, maybe. That is a whole different vibe.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email every week. I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
All right. Anything in the email and a female larder?
I think so. What's a larder?
Okay. I paused because I think larder means sort of like pantry. I used to read a fair amount of Louis L'Amour books, and I feel like people were often checking the larder.
Looks like you're right.
Larder.
A room or large cupboard for storing food.
Larder.
Thanks, Louis L'Amour.
Yeah. all right. So he was the guy with the French name who wrote Westerns, right? That was something that I could never get my head around. I would always see his books and B. Dalton. Oh, my gosh. Did I tell you?
B. Dalton.
I don't want to sound like classist myself here after we were just talking about class issues in that Peloton commercial. But I did go, as I mentioned on yesterday's show in a very long-winded way, I spent a little bit of time in whatever the mall is up in Everett over the weekend. Vies and I were up there to watch a movie and, you know, just to blade it out a little bit. We had a little bit of time before the movie. We had about an hour. So we're like, well, let's just wander around the mall. We hadn't been in a kind of a classic indoor mall in a long time. And it was funny because, first of all, a lot of the stores we had never heard of before. It was like everything was just like off a click. It felt like the Upside Down had a mall, sort of, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, we were talking about this a little bit last night, too. One store that we recognized.
The Quinceañera store?
There was that. That was in there. And that, you know, they just had these big, beautiful dresses, which was nice, but they didn't have any kind of carpeting on the floor. It was just like kind of a wrecked up, not a wecked up, but kind of a
nope.
It was like a hard cement floor that was unfinished and just kind of seemed like somebody's unfinished basement.
It was basically the shell of like a J. Crew or something.
Probably. Yeah. And they just kind of went in there and set up a shop. As Genevieve said, it seemed like any of these shops could just like disappear in like an hour, like and just become something else. Like it was a very strange experience. Anyway, how did I get on that? Larder.
B.
Dalton, Louis L'Amour. I did see whatever off-brand bookstore they had in there reminded me of the bookstores that I would always try to, like, I would just beeline for when, you know, my parents went to the mall. I'd be like, I'll be in the bookstore reading the Far Side books. And I'd always see the Louis L'Amours.
They have
and
a D. Dalton there.
Yeah, right. And I would always see them. I'm like, I don't get it. Is this French or cowboy? Like, I couldn't quite get my head around it.
I read them just because they were in the room where we had study hall in Mr. Talbot's class in like seventh grade, I think, which is also a very much a function of the time that I grew up in. I don't think that I don't think kids these days would just have to read Louis L'Amour because it was like the book that was available. In my grade school years, it was a lot of Reader's Digest because that's what Mrs. Wharton would bring in. And those were just in that like kind of, what do you call it, that round kind of rotating wire-framed book. I don't know. It's not a shelf, but you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, for paperbacks, like?
In the back of the room, there was one of these kind of, you could just like, you could spin it around and just had books in it, and there was a lot of Reader's Digest. So I was a real Reader's Digest head in grade school, and then Mr. Talbot had Louis L'Amour books, so then I was a Louis L'Amour head. Like, this was all just driven by proximity for me. Like,
I'm just amazed that his name, we're talking about mall stores, and his name was Talbot. Isn't Talbot a mall store?
Yeah, I don't think they had Talbots at the Northgate Mall, which was where most of my mall dwelling took place. But they did have the Pro Image there, which was The stores that I was the most obsessed with as a kid at the mall were the Pro Image, because it just was starter jackets for days. Speaking of which, is it Marilyn? There's a woman at the Eagles who's kind of one of the sort of matriarchs of that place, mm-hmm. I would think. She's
I think
older lady.
Yep.
She had on the sweetest Seahawks starter jacket last night, like circa 1984,
mm-hmm.
which you know she bought new and has just been wearing.
Yeah.
For 30 plus years, which is really cool. Unlike me, like going on like dead stock, like finding it on eBay and paying too much money for it to try to evoke some ironic stance. But anyway, I loved the Pro Image. And then there was this weird store that just sold like cutlery, but that included pocket knives, which was a big focus for me as a kid. I was all about getting some knives for some reason. And it had a knight like in a suit of armor that would sit that was like standing outside of this weird little store, and I loved that place. I would just go in and look at the knives. I had a lock blade knife, which was pretty small actually. That was like I think my parents were like, "That's enough knife for you," but that was I remember a big deal was trying to acquire cool knives.
I might be creating false memories here. Mm-hmm, something probably. I've been working on in my lab. But I wonder if that was a chain store, because I remember some sort of a store that was very near the food court. I think this was in Great Northern Mall or maybe Westlake Mall where I grew up. And I remember this somewhat fascinating store. It was rather small. It had knives and stuff in it, but it also just seemed to have like a lot of just metal intrigue. Metal Intrigue mm-hmm. is also a great album.
Yeah. That's Gears of War 6, Metal Intrigue.
And I think they had a suit of armor outside of it. You don't remember the name of that store, do you?
I want to say it was called like Excalibur, but I could be – that could also be a false memory or just a false flag.
Have you been in my lab?
I don't know. I don't remember because of all the experimenting you've done on me.
Call me Krieger. Anyway, I'll look that up later.
Goatly. If you were to like, if you were to really break down young Luke Burbank's interest, I mean, you'd see a very troubled adult. Like, what's this kid into? Pornography and throwing stars. Okay.
I'm Excalibur. Let's see here. I'm only getting the casino. Anyway. Here.
That's why I could be misremembering it, but I feel like it was Excalibur Cutlery or something like that.
And also, like I say, maybe we're talking about two completely different things. I got a charming email here from listener Rachel.
All right.
Who says, "Hey, this is Rachel from Denver." We hear from Rachel from time to time. She says, I just got done listening to one of your recent episodes, and I'm a little muddled in my listening, so I forget which one it was. But you had your Denver conversation again. And I just had to write in about this.
Denver conversation.
Yeah, she says maybe twice a year you two have the exact same conversation about Denver. It usually goes something like this.
Oh, hold on. Let me try to guess. Can I?
Yep.
Can I?
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Elitch's, and then I hurt my neck at Elitch's, and that's all I got.
Okay,
Is that part of it?
I think it's a little bit more general than that. It says it goes like this. Something about Denver comes up. Luke says, "You know, we have a lot of listeners in Denver." Andrew, "Oh, yeah, I like Denver. Genevieve wants to move to Denver." Luke, "Yeah, you know, I don't love Denver. I mean, it's okay. Then usually something about the weather, I think. Let me just say, you two need to come to Denver for a 10 event, and we will make it will make everyone happy. Andrew, I sent you a Denver dossier, and I forgot one of the most compelling things about this lovely city. We have the OG Chipotle. That's right, the first one ever. Also the first Quiznos, if that interests you. Anyways,
yes.
Come to Denver. We love you. Power out." And I wanted to read this because I had forgotten about the Denver dossier that Rachel had sent in a while back, and she made it as a tourism pamphlet in presentation form, like if you were to be like sitting in like one of those meeting rooms in American Public Media and they were explaining like a format change or something like that. She put together this whole Come to Denver dossier come here. We're awesome. Cool things are here. Dive bars, vegetarian places, the best places for eagle soaring and starting. Hikes, mountains, beauty. The design work that Rachel put into this is just stunning. And so I would like to post this to today's web page, show page on the web, and so everybody can drink it in. And also we will consider this invitation to Denver.
You know, I'm not crazy about Denver.
Is it the weather?
Andrew, it's fine, but yeah, it's like something, something, the weather, something, something.
Genevieve says it's one of the sunniest cities in the country. She wants to move there.
Really? I'm not crazy about Denver, Andrew. I'm glitching now.
Yeah.
I'm trapped in a loop just doing the same.
You have been in my lab.
Please. I mean, peace and love. We should definitely go to Denver and do a show from there. It's long overdue. And was it listener Rachel? Is that who checked in from Denver?
Yeah.
And thank you, Rachel, for checking in. Please, nobody remind us of how we have basically four conversations that we just reconstitute, like, you know, and present, you know, on a probably monthly basis. Like, I know, Rachel, you're so right that we just have these scripts that we fall into, Andrew and I, but it's like to hear you go, you are having your Denver conversation, I just makes me feel so embarrassed. I know that wasn't Rachel's point.
Right.
And we will come to Denver, so you didn't ruin it for everybody in Denver, Rachel. But, like, the idea of the listeners just sitting going like, oh, here comes this one, is just like – because it's so unself-aware on my part. I'm not going to drag you into this, but it's like –
No, I
it's
mean,
just this,
we're doing it. We're doing it every day. It's just like a lot of – it's just hard to talk this much without repeating yourself.
I know. And we have limited experience. Or at least I do.
Yeah.
No, it's like – and it really is. It's like you're – when you, you know, do this – people are often quite surprised. People in radio especially, or I should say in public radio, where so much stuff is – as I – here's one of my many go-tos. I talk about the sort of like precious diamond of public radio that's being made. There's so many people that work in public radio, and they might, you know, work on a show that's once a week, and a lot of care goes into it, every moment of it, and they hear, like, we do five of these a week. They're like, how do you do it? And I'm like, well, if you lower the bar enough,
yes,
you can really do anything, but which is the truth. But then it's like part of that is we're just talking. This is an XY axis in our head, and it turns out that those things intersect for me when it comes to Denver. I'm surprised that she didn't mention that theme park, because that's my big story from Denver. I was on a road trip to Grand Junction, Colorado, with my friends Ben and Amanda. I believe we were delivering a car to Grand Junction for some reason. And so Ben and I drove out there, and then on the way back, we swung through Denver and we went to Elitch's, which is a cool amusement park. But on the very first ride I went on, I just like completely torqued my neck, and I was miserable. It was like that story that you've told about how you were like basically down on your hands and knees, like you were getting in the car or something and you kind of had a spasm.
Yeah,
it was like that. But I was on a trip, which was like very, very inconvenient. So to this day, if I think of the city of Denver, well, two things come up: me hurting my neck and then the Denver Broncos rivalry with the Seahawks. When I was a kid, that was everything. And my other go-to related to that and Denver is that Sportsline with Wayne Cody. There was a whole like war going on between the sports radio stations in Seattle and Denver, and they would do these songs that were making fun of Brian Bosworth, and they would make these songs on Wayne Cody's show that were making fun of John Elway. And I believe there was one called Elway the Sleazebag Hoseball, set to the tune of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, my God.
So this was – think about it. This was unfolding around Christmas time, because this is when the season was getting very interesting, right? And it was like Elway the Sleazeball Hosebag. I forget the rest of the song, but that's also what I think about when I think of Denver.
The name of your cutlery store wasn't Armageddon, was it? Because I'm finding that online. That's closed now.
That's a great name.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
That reminds me, I don't know why this is coming to mind, because it's not even the same band. It made me think of, what is that? I'm a Getting It. I'm Really Getting It, which is like a Def Leppard song.
Oh, Armageddon. Yeah, Armageddon. No, I think it's called Armageddon, right? Yeah.
That's a Def Leppard song, but for some reason what came into my mind was the big news yesterday that Billie Eilish, the singer, doesn't know who Van Halen is.
Oh, yeah.
And last night I asked Camaro Kev, as a noted Van Halen enthusiast, if he cared about that, and he was like, no, of course not.
Yeah.
Like, they're not relevant anymore. It's like as if like you know when then we were going around the table thinking of bands that kind of stopped being relevant 10 years before we were born, and like could we name all of those bands? Of course not.
Right. Yeah. I got it. When you guys were talking about that, and for some reason I heard AC/DC when you said Def Leppard, and I for some reason I feel like AC/DC is more forgettable than Def Leppard. I feel like Def Leppard had a bigger impact, but I'm not basing that on anything, maybe just my own personal taste. Do you think there's any ring of truth to that?
To the fact
or,
that
no,
AC/DC
I'm saying, did I say Van Halen or Def Leppard? I thought you guys were talking about Van Halen.
We were.
Okay,
we
yeah,
were,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
the one that Billy. That's the one Billie Eilish hasn't heard
gotcha.
Of. I'm sure she's heard of them now, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. Sorry, now, you know, it was Def Leppard that got us into this, so now I'm confusing all three of them. What I meant to say was maybe Def Leppard and AC/DC are about on the same level, but Van Halen seems like it would have a bigger cultural impact. I guess I'm saying I'm more surprised that it's Van Halen as opposed to one of those other bands, but she probably hasn't heard of those either, so...
Can you tell my go-to Def Leppard-related story? This is the new way. This is the
We should do this.
Basically,
first.
What happens is I try to tell your stories and you tell my stories, and we get a whole new year out of this,
dude.
It's the same stories, but it's you telling them when they're my story and me telling them when it's your story, and then the listeners are delighted.
Let's do that for one of the winter games. Let's test each other on each other's stories or on our own stories.
Do you want to keep your powder dry on my Def Leppard story?
Let's just say that it's a mad.
You're close.
Let's just say that story is mad about us. Damn, what did she say to you? It was like the first girl you kissed, right?
No, it was a girl who had a crush on me, which was a rare occurrence for me in seventh grade. And she told me that the song Love Bites by Def Leppard was
mass true, not mad.
And I remember listening to the
us.
Song and being like, this is intense. When you make love, do you look in the mirror? I haven't even kissed anyone. What are you talking about?
You never looked in the mirror again the same way.
While making love. I mean, that was over at that moment, except my workout mirror. I do actually. Right. That is a thing I like.
Did she say the show Mad About You is Mad About Us?
Yes, she actually also say that.
I did
so
remember that
wrong.
Part at least.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I'm going to give you half a point for that.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Any other
I'm
emails or V-mails before we get out of here?
No, let's leave it there for today. But I do want to encourage people. I just sent you the Denver dossier, Luke, because I think you'll get a kick out of it. And
dossier is such a loaded word.
I know. Click that thing open, though. It is so delightful. And so we'll have a link to it so you can scroll through it yourself, everybody. That'll be at tbtl.net.
Okay, excellent. I guess that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thanks for being part of TBTL. Again, we have a No Point Conversation. Today's TBTL is coming in at just about an hour. I'm sure the No Point will come in at a healthy 3 to 5 hours.
Yeah, right.
That's the kind of big football energy I'm bringing to that conversation. So look forward to that. And for those of you who don't care about sport, we'll be back here tomorrow with a regular old TBTL. So we'll see you then. Until then, enjoy your Tuesday. Thanks for listening, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.